Hello and welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is your host, John Jantz, and my guest today is Peter Sims. He is an author, speaker, and entrepreneur. He co-authored a book called True North, which I read a while ago, and we're going to talk about his newest book called Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. So, Peter, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, John. Great to be here. Sorry about that noise.
So have you? Is there a crime you've committed? I need to know about
maybe,
here?
Maybe we should restart that.
No, this is live radio. My listeners, realize that it's live when they hear good things like that. It happens every now and then on my end as well. So let's just let her rip.
Awesome, great, John.
So let's define what a little bet is first, just so we sort of have a baseline.
Sure. So you know, we think we have to have big ideas or brilliant ideas often before we do something new, but in reality, that's not the way things work. We studied over 300 innovators and creators just to understand how they actually work. People like Chris Rock, the comedian, let's say, will make hundreds, thousands of little bets on ideas in small clubs when he's developing a new routine. He has no idea what's going to work and what's not until he actually goes out into these small clubs and literally tries lots and lots of possibilities. And from that, he learns where the opportunities are going to lie, watching every little gesture in the audience, and he builds night after night jokes into, you know, more developed jokes and then into a full act. So for him to come together with a new routine may take 6 months to a year, but that's how it works. So little bets are these small, affordable actions that we can take to discover and develop new ideas.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people see something that becomes fully developed and it's like, oh, that's brilliant. You know, how did they come up with that innovation? And a lot of times it's, well, it was a sort of a 25-year overnight success, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the history of, companies, it's that way for sure. We look back and they say, oh, it started with this brilliant vision. But, I mean, if you look at Starbucks or Google or any of the great companies that have emerged over the past 20, 25 years, it's just not the case. I mean, Google started as a project where Larry Page and Sergey Brin were trying to understand how to prioritize library searches, and they were able to solve that problem and apply it to a much larger problem. Starbucks started by Howard Schultz wanting to recreate the coffee experience he had in Milan cafes, but the first Starbucks he started in Seattle had nonstop opera music playing, baristas wearing bow ties, which they really found uncomfortable, and no chairs. So it had to evolve. And so it's just a little bit just about how do you think in a more evolutionary way when you're developing ideas.
Yeah, and I think some of the greatest innovations, I mean, we could probably sit here for 10 minutes and just list them, are things that were done because somebody needed something, you know, in their own company. They couldn't get, you know, they couldn't do CRM the way they wanted, or, you know, or project management the way they wanted. And so they created something for themselves and they realized, hey, that's a pretty cool tool.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So now, you know, this, your message, of course, runs a little counter to the kind of, you know, maybe we've all gotten a little more conservative with the downturn in the economy, but certainly the last 10 years and everything coming out of the internet has been, hey, you know, go really big and you know, burn through whatever money you need to, you know, to make your big idea, you know, come to fruition. But are we just sort of maturing around that idea?
I definitely think that notion has changed. I mean, that was certainly the case in the dot-com era. But, you know, I was in venture capital at that time, and we saw so many companies just go into the wasteland with that mentality. And so, I mean, today you see a few different rising schools of thought, especially in places like Silicon Valley. One of those is what they call the lean startup, which basically, very simply, says that you should try to really understand what problems you're solving very early. So put out what they call a minimum viable product, just something that's okay and not too embarrassing to put out into the world so that you can learn very quickly whether you're solving the right problems, and then iterate and build from there. And then there's another school of thought called design thinking, which advocates something very similar. So this is really what's dominating the discussion these days amongst, you know, startup small business owners, and will continue to.
And so the word bet certainly conjures up for some people gambling, betting. Is there, I mean, are we talking about taking on an inherent risk that in an effort to, you know, maybe have a whole bunch of little failures so you have the little win?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, a bet is just an option to learn. And and that's how I use it. But yeah, I mean, it's exactly lots of, the reality is, if the reality is that really great ideas evolve from lots of small failures, if you will, mm-hmm. small things that don't eventually work up, that you piece together what is working and learn through the process to build. I think of it as building blocks. If you look at how people in the military think when they're doing counterinsurgency, or if you look at how a lot of you know, people like an architect like Frank Gehry work, they call it something like consolidating gains or using building blocks. So you find a piece that works, like a piece of a Chris Rock joke that works, and then you just keep building on those blocks that are working, and you know, it's a learning process from there.
Now, did you find, and I know you talked to maybe hundreds of companies by the time you were done, but did you find, is there sort of a repeatable process that these companies seem to go through, that if I'm sitting out there listening, I say, okay, I like that idea of you know, little wins. You know, is there sort of a way for me to go about this so that I can start consciously discovering those?
Yes. Well, the book is organized around a series of methods, such as small wins and consolidating gains is one example of that. Another example of that would be just the ability to do prototyping. Mm. You know, the ability to take really low risk, low resolution ideas and put them, say, on a piece of paper that you bounce off of your colleagues or your customers who you trust, to very early in the process understand whether you're going down the right path. Procter & Gamble has really tried to gravitate towards using more inexpensive, low-risk prototyping, making things out of cardboard or duct tape, literally, at first, and see what works before going too far down a path. Because if we work to develop a perfect idea, then we're going to be very emotionally attached to it, and so that's going to create its own set of problems. But then even more, customers aren't going to feel like they can provide input into the process of that next idea, product, service, what have you. And so the more you're able to lower those barriers, the quicker you're able to be sure you're identifying problems that are new and fresh and oftentimes unarticulated. So there's other examples of these methods in the book to figure out how to do that quickly and strategically.
Well, and I think that for certainly small companies have discovered this, but you mentioned Procter & Gamble. Even the largest companies have probably discovered this. The Internet has really sort of enabled that. Hey, let's put the prototype out to 8 customers, you know, and not tell anybody else about it, and see what happens. And I think that the tools have really come along recently that have really allowed that.
To be able to do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And every company can use that as, you know, as an advantage.
Now, I'm sort of torn, and I'm sure some listeners might be too, hearing this, because, you know, there certainly is a school of thought in business that some of what we're talking about is something that you might do, say, in a strategic plan or in a strategic planning exercise, you know, once a year. I mean, can you plan out sort of a series of these little bets with the idea that they'll turn into one big bet, or is that the wrong way to approach this?
You know, this book is not about strategic planning. It's about getting out in the world to do things, to discover what to do. It's sort of the opposite of planning. And so the point is that if the best ideas and insights are going to be out in the world, don't spend time in the office. One of the chapters is dedicated to this reality that the best ideas and insights are out in the world. So get out of your office.
Yeah.
Is a really important principle that all these types of folks we interviewed talked about. And so it's really just it's about kind of being able to think differently. We all know how to solve known problems pretty well. We all know how to mm-hmm. think when we have knowledge, but how do you create knowledge? How do you actually get out in the world and create knowledge? And that's what this book is about.
Yeah, and I think that also brings up another great point. I think some companies probably struggle from, as you said, if we know the customer has this problem, we can try to, you know, gather some resources to address it. But a lot of times the biggest innovations come about in discovering something that we, you know, a problem we didn't know they had, you know.
Right. Or an articulated problem.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that in many cases that's probably what particularly small companies struggle with the most. I mean, I think what you're advocating is you don't know what those are, and there's no sense trying to figure them out necessarily. Go out and throw some stuff out there and see what sort of resonates.
This halftime break is brought to you by Constant Contact. Constant Contact helps small businesses and nonprofits build great customer relationships with email marketing, event marketing, and online surveys. Visit them today at constantcontact.com. duckttape.com and sign up for your free 60-day trial.
Right. I mean, when Frank Gehry, the architect, right, designed Disney Hall, when he starts a new building, he literally just begins by crumbling up pieces of paper or cardboard and, you know, literally using things like duct tape. And then he goes out to his clients and he puts them in front of his clients and says, listen, this is just a very early prototype, very early version. I just want to see if we're kind of headed down the right path here. And from that process, he'll be able to understand some of their needs. Like in the case of Disney Hall, he was able to understand the importance of acoustics to the symphony. And, you know, he wouldn't have known that going into the process, but the more he's able to get out there and really just immerse with his audience, the more that those types of insights come out. And there's a whole bunch of research that shows how this, using these kind of anthropological techniques, can help to identify those unarticulated needs. So I think it's something any of us can do. It's just we never learn how to work and think like this in school, straight through business school, which is a puzzle to me, and I think that's going to change.
Well, yeah, good luck on that one.
I
think it is, but I think, boy, there's certainly a lot of forces that seem destined to not allow any change in things like curriculum. I mean, I still talk to a lot of college and graduate marketing folks, and, you know, they're still teaching some stuff that was, you know, 50 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, another challenge, I suspect, that maybe doesn't seem quite as obvious, and I do want to talk about some of the folks that you interviewed and some of the sort of case studies that you came up with, but I imagine for some people, you know, it's not enough to just create these. In fact, I run across companies all the time that are creating these innovations, these little bets and these little wins. They just don't recognize them. They don't realize the opportunity that they might be sitting on because they, you know, think everybody in their industry does it that way or something. And I sometimes think that there's sort of two parts to that. It's one is getting people to do this testing, but then the other is getting them to, you know, to understand when they're sitting on a real opportunity. And I wonder if your research sort of turned up any of that kind of A and B sort of parts of the equation.
You know, Jeff Bezos, I think, and Amazon do a very good job of making little bets and then developing those little bets to see what's going to work. I mean, to your point about people solving problems internally that they can then take broader, I mean, that's how Amazon was able to get its Amazon Web Services, all these back-end services, off the ground as small bets. And, you know, the way they approach it, in the way Bezos thinks about it, is if we're excited about this bet, if we're excited about some idea that we've been exploring, if we think it can become at least a $10 million business, that's our threshold. If we're excited about it and we can see it at least getting to maybe $10 million in revenue, then let's put some of our best people on it and see where it can go. So the senior team, the S team at Amazon, is very involved in that process and constantly kind of weeding out and deciding what bets to double down on. So I think it takes that type of leadership to be able to do this effectively, to be able to do anything effectively as a business. So there's very, 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 very high amount of involvement from the S team at Amazon.
Yeah, and I guess if you're going to do this intentionally, right, as a strategy to make these small bets, then certainly some way to measure and analyze them has to be part
absolutely.
Of that. Yeah, it's not
critical. I mean, part of the idea of a small bet is you have to decide up front what you can afford to lose in. And you also have to decide what your constraints are, what your time, budget, you know, all these different constraints are, so you can measure against those parameters how you're doing over time.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, that's really a great point, because there certainly are so many, not so many, but a portion of people that would listen to this and think, okay, I just need to be trying a whole bunch of new stuff. And obviously that can take, you know, that sort of approach can lead to taking your eye off the ball of the stuff that is actually making your money.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's not strategic. So yeah, and so that's part of the point of these chapters, is to provide, you know, a way of thinking about this in a strategic way.
So I'm talking to Peter Sims, author of Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. And Peter, I wonder if you could share a couple maybe ideas of some of the companies that you found that do this process very well. And again, I know you've mentioned a few of them, but maybe even particularly those that if somebody's listening and could say, I'll go study what they're doing to kind of learn from them.
Yeah, I think the companies that are the best at this are Amazon and Pixar. Pixar is a company that, you know, started off as a hardware company. So just kind of example of how they think about small bets. It began, you know, in the mid-80s, a hardware company. Steve Jobs bought Pixar and really expected it to be a hardware company. But the people there were making small bets on making short films, you know, 1 to 2 minute films to really learn how to tell stories and do the technology behind filmmaking. And then that has extended today. So they do just reams and reams of small bets with each film. I mean, they literally develop each film through a similar approach as the one Chris Rock uses, except they show their material internally before they develop the next stage of the project. And so just creating that kind of mindset, though, that experimental mindset runs deep at Pixar and Apple as well. I mean, Apple has a design culture in its DNA, and so those are all companies that do this very well. And, you know, to learn more about companies, you know, they're featured in the book, for one, and then I have a whole bunch in the back of the book, I have a whole bunch of resources and extended, you know, bibliography of places to go for further research and reading. I mean, the book is packed with a lot of research, and, you know, people can go to the back of the book and find out more about some of those companies.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I do a lot of teaching. You know, a lot of companies are very tactical, and especially in their marketing, and they want to know, you know, what's the new thing I need to do. And I do a lot of teaching about developing strategy, marketing strategy first, that you can then use to kind of fuel what's the right tactic. And I think that, you know, that might be a safer way, if you will, or certainly a very tried and true way to start looking at some of these little bets is, you know, is there something we can do that certainly would already support our, you know, our already stated objectives or positioning or marketing strategy? And I think that might be one way to kind of start getting started if you're trying to, because I think a lot of times business owners and marketers, you know, look at ideas, new ideas, and they can sort of get overwhelmed because, you know, you could take this idea and say, okay, let's look at every aspect of our company, and you know, that might actually lead to doing nothing.
Right. Well, this is very simple. I mean, that's why it's a little bet. It's just anybody can make a little bet. Anybody can scribble, like, you know, when I began this book project, I scribbled ideas down on sheets of paper that I bounced off of my family and people I trusted to try to understand if I was onto something interesting. In fact, the title for the book, the core idea for the book, came out of that process, out of, you know, one of the 10 discussions I had. And then, you know, when I showed that to people who were, you know, in publishing and agents and editors and whatnot, everybody thought it was a great idea, but it was something that I had developed in a very low-risk manner through this rapid iteration early to see what was going to work and what wasn't. So anybody can use this approach, and I just think it saves a ton of time, and it also unleashes creativity because you're just combining all these learnings that you make using these low-risk bets, and it speeds up the whole process.
I would think there would be kind of an interesting element of an organization's culture too, to sort of introduce that idea of, and I know, you know, the Google is sort of storied about telling their designer or their programmers to take, you know, X amount of time every week to just work on something that they want to work on.
Sure, and, or 3M.
Yeah. And I think that you probably could install that as a bit of a culture, as get everybody, you know, the old suggestion box, you know, becomes this idea of little bets.
Toyota does that very well, and Procter & Gamble, that's exactly what Procter & Gamble is doing, is moving towards more of a small bet culture. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that sort of dovetails with this whole idea of a lot of the really big companies are trying to find ways to act smaller in general.
Yeah, exactly.
And because I think they've, you know, the internet particularly sort of made them vulnerable to this kind of, you know, turning the big giant ship approach, and a lot of small companies are, you know, kind of ate their lunch in certain categories. For example, one of my favorite stories, Method, which is a household, you know, cleaning products company.
Sure.
Really kind of.
I know Method for sure.
Kind of stole the green cleaning market right out of underneath Procter & Gamble's nose, frankly.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Certainly. I'm sure large companies are trying to react to that and get a little more nimble. Well, Peter, thanks so much for joining us. And on top of all the places people can buy the book, do you have a site dedicated to the book where people might find out more or at least find out more about what you're doing in your other work?
Sure. It's just www.petersims.com, and there's a link to a free excerpt of the book there on the site and lots of other articles and resources. So yeah, absolutely. No, thanks so much for having me, John.
You bet. All right. Take care, Peter. And maybe we'll see you out there talking to small businesses about strategy someday.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Take care.